All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm pretty good. I cleaned the house.
Very good.
And so I, my boyfriend is gone. He's in Colorado right now.
Hiking. Doing a safe, socially distanced vacation.
Exactly. He's you know, 13,000 feet on a mountain. He's not meeting anyone. So he left, and when he left... So, we used to have 3 mailbox keys, but throughout the years we've lived in this apartment, we've gone down to 1. And he left with a mailbox key, and I got multiple packages delivered, and I was like, oh, crap. But you had a mailbox key from here, and you gave it to me, and I tried it, and it didn't work, and I thought it, because it was the wrong mailbox key. But as we just found out, it's the correct mailbox key, but it won't open my mailbox, because I think... The post people stuffed it too full, and the little latch is caught, and I don't know what to do about that, because it's the weekend.
Yeah, it'll go in, but it won't turn, like it's blocked.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know if I should just muscle it through and try and force it open, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's a box is blocking it, and it's not going to work. So, I don't know what to do, because I don't think the post office is going to be open until Monday, and it's the weekend, and even then, do I call them and be like, hey, you need to open my mailbox for me? I don't know what to do with that. So,
here we are. I think you should just, like, stake out and, like, wait for the mailman.
Wait for the mailman. Open my mailbox.
Yes.
Yeah. Do they sometimes deliver on Saturdays? I don't remember.
Sometimes, I think.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Wait, it's... Today's, they just said that. This delivered it this morning.
Today's Friday.
Saturday. You're right. Yeah. I don't know what day it is because all the days run together now.
Yep. That's life.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. It's getting a little hotter, which is but I hope it, like, cools down more. Yeah. Not really much going on. We're going to do Clueless.
Yeah, for our patrons.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, and we just did Vivarium on Patreon.
Which is a very fun movie, and you guys should watch
Definitely watch it, and then definitely go subscribe to our Patreon and listen to the episode, because I think it's a pretty fun episode.
It is a pretty fun
episode. We found some pretty crazy theories on the movie, and they're really fun to listen to. So
yeah, watch the movie on Amazon Prime. It's not long. It's like an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it's free, like, on Amazon Prime.
And it goes really quick.
You know, free with Amazon Prime, so...
Yep.
Not free, but...
But...
If you already have Amazon Prime, it's free.
I assume you guys are movie buffs, so I would assume that a lot of you have Amazon Prime, because there are a lot of good movies on there.
Indeed. So, today, we are talking about The Master.
Directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. So, this is our second Paul Thomas Anderson film we're doing.
Yes.
Our first being There Will Be Blood.
Yes. So, this one is sort of about and not about Scientology.
It's like... It's not about Scientology, but it is.
It is about Scientology, but they never say
They never say it's about Scientology. They call, like, what Scientologists would call auditing, they call it, like, processing.
Yeah.
And it's, like, very obviously, like, Scientology, because Philip Seymour Hoffman looks exactly like L. Ron Hubbard, down to the mustache.
Yeah.
And there's the boat thing. Like, everything. It's about Scientology.
It's about Scientology. And it's in its early years.
Yeah, set in the 60s. 1961 is when this film was set.
Yes. So, Anderson has stated that this is his favorite film he's ever made to date.
Interesting.
I have to disagree.
Yeah.
Respectfully. Mm-hmm. I mean, no, I can't disagree with his opinion that it's his favorite, but I certainly can disagree with the fact that it's his best.
So, the film stars Philip Seymour Hoffman, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Phil Cy Hoffman.
Sorry, we just get choked up.
We just get all choked up on cue. and then Joaquin Phoenix, of course, Oscar winner.
Yeah.
And then Amy Adams.
Yeah, along with a bunch of other famous people too,
Laura Dern.
Laura Dern's in it. The girl from You is in it.
Mm-hmm. Rami Malek is in it.
Yeah, he's in it. There's so many people. When I looked up the top billed cast. So there's, like, the four. There's Philip Seymour Hoffman, Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams. And then there's the guy that played Val, the son, Jesse.
Oh, he's so good. He's in Fargo.
Jesse
and
Plemons.
And Breaking Bad.
And then it just goes into a bunch of people that are not important. And, like, all the rest of the people, like, Martha the sales girl, that girl that appears in, like, the very first 20 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She's in it before Amber Childers, who played Elizabeth Dodd, and Rami Malek are in it.
What?
So I'm assuming, I don't know who made this or who input this in, but you have to scroll through so many people that don't even have pictures on their IMDb because they've done so few things and they are so unimportant in the things that they're in before you even get to people like
Rami Malek. Oscar winner.
Literally. So, yeah. So this is the worst IMDb page I've ever seen. I was like, Jesse Plemons is higher billed than the sister?
Right. I love that actor, though. He's very good.
I mean, I guess he's probably been in more stuff than she has at this point.
I mean, yeah, he's been Breaking Bad. He got nominated for an Emmy in Fargo, I think.
Yeah, there's also, like, I mean, you obviously came out long after this. There are a lot of people, I feel like, who were in this movie who weren't as famous as they are now when they were in this movie. And now they're really famous. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird to, like, look back and be like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Rami Malek. Okay, so the plot. Freddie Quell is a traumatized World War II veteran.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Indeed. Struggling to adjust to post-war society and prone to violent and erratic behavior.
Too violent for Vietnam?
Come on over to the army. Come on over to the police force. Joaquin Phoenix, this is his classic character.
Yes.
Erratic.
Unwell. Violent.
That's Joaquin Phoenix, except in Signs.
But he finds his niche, really, though. He's so good at it. I know. He's, like, fantastic. He does it the best, in my opinion.
He's really good at it.
He's really good at playing an erratic, unwell character.
He works as a photographer in a department store, but is fired after getting into a fight with a customer. Which, by the way, is prompted by a bunch of nothing.
Yeah, he's very angry.
he prompts it.
Yeah.
Prompted by him, 100%. While working on a farm in California, an elderly colleague collapses after drinking a batch of Freddy's homemade moonshine. Freddy flees after he is accused of poisoning him. One night, Freddy finds himself in San Francisco and stows away on the yacht of a follower of Lancaster Dodd, the leader of a philosophical movement known as The Cause. When he is discovered, Dodd describes Freddy as aberrated and claims that he met him in the past but cannot remember where. He invites Freddy to stay and attend the marriage of his daughter, Elizabeth, as long as he will make more moonshine, which Dodd has developed a taste for.
So his moonshine is, like, just basically a bunch of chemicals mixed together. And at one point he drinks,
paint thinner.
He's like, you know, like Charlie Kelly on Always Sunny in Philadelphia? It's like what he drinks.
Yeah.
Just, like, cleaning supplies.
It's literally, like, turpentine.
Yeah.
And a glass cleaner and bleach. And then he's like, that's moonshine, baby.
Yeah.
And then he's like, wow, you're, like, how are you alive? Literally, how are you alive? This is, like, the first thing I'm thinking is, like, is that really what he's putting in there? Because this man is putting photo-developing chemicals into a batch. I was like, you should not be drinking that. but, you know, Dodd likes it, so aboard he comes.
Dodd is played by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes. Dodd begins an exercise with Freddy called processing, in which he asks Freddy a flurry of disturbing psychological questions. During the exercise, Freddy reveals details of his past, including his father's death, his mother's incarceration in a mental asylum, and his incestuous sexual encounters with his aunt. He also has a flashback to his past relationship with Doris, a young woman from his hometown whom Freddy promised he would one day return to. She, basically, when they met, she was 16, and he was an adult, much older than her.
Yeah.
So they could not be together because he was like, well, you are in school.
Yeah, you're too young.
But basically he's like, I'll come back for you and we'll get together. And she's like, cool, I'll wait. So, but you know, when that day is, he does not know. So Freddy travels with Dodd's family as they spread the teaching of The Cause along the East Coast, which, by the way, The Cause is just the most vague name ever because they just don't want to say Scientology.
Yes.
So they're like, oh, what's, like, the most vague thing you could call a religion that any religion has ever called itself?
Do The Cause.
The Cause. Literally what everything any ever has called itself.
So we're not going to call it Scientology.
We're devoting ourselves to The Cause. And you're like, yeah, so is everyone else. They spread it along the East Coast. So at a dinner party in New York, a man questions Dodd's methods and statements and accuses the movement of being a cult.
Allison loves this part.
This is a great part because he's like, so you think your religion can cure leukemia? And he's like,
My book says some forms
of leukemia can be cured by this. And he's like, well, how? And he's like, well, you see, you can go back. You can basically access your past lives and discover cures for, or like, you know, how diseases came to be trillions of years ago. And it's like, well, we know. Well, I guess at this time, they didn't really know how cancer worked. They only sort of knew.
Yeah.
They just knew it was like a mutation of the cells. I guess they didn't really realize like that certain things cause it. Because back then we were like, smoking is great for you.
It's so good.
You should totally smoke. It's so good for your stress levels.
Watch Mad Men, yeah. That's literally what the whole thing is about.
It's literally like all doctors in the 60s. And then like 69 rolls around and they're like, oh,
well,
shit.
It's good for you because it makes your heart beat faster, which makes blood pump faster through your body. Yeah. So it's good for you.
And you're like, wow, we didn't know shit. And you're like, I can't believe people lived. Even now, I'm like, what one day are we going to be like, well, that was not right at all. But, yeah, so, basically, eventually, the guy's like, you're preying on people who are desperate and sick and lonely, and you're promising them this cure-all, and you're a cult. So, Dog loses his temper, calling the man a pig fuck, and asks him to leave. Freddy pursues the man to his apartment and assaults him that night, according...
Classic Freddy.
Yeah, to Dodd's dismay. Dodd is not cool with this.
No.
Because
he's like, well, he's part of the cause, so anything he does bad, like, reflects badly on the cause.
Which it does.
Which it does, yes.
Which it absolutely does. So, yeah, he's smart to be like, hey, don't fucking do that. So, other members of the cause begin to worry about Freddy's behavior. Rightfully so.
Amy Adams in particular.
Amy Adams and Elizabeth's husband, played by Rami Malek, he really doesn't like Freddy. Yeah. He was also there when Freddy assaulted the man.
Yeah.
Like, and he was not aware that we were assaulting the man. Yeah, he was not in on it.
No, he was just like, what?
So, Freddy criticizes Dodd's son, Val, for disregarding his father's teachings. But Val tells Freddy that Dodd is making things up as he goes along. So his own son doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't buy what he's saying. He knows that he's like a charlatan.
And his son's an adult, too, by the way. He's not like 10. Dodd is arrested for practicing medicine without proper qualifications after one of his former hostesses has a change of heart. Freddy attacks the police officers and also is arrested. In jail, Freddy erupts in an angry tirade, questioning everything that Dodd ever taught him and accusing him of being a fake. Dodd calls Freddy lazy and worthless and claims nobody likes him except for Dodd.
Classic cult leader manipulation. Cult leader.
Nobody likes you except for me. I'm the only person that loves you. Classic just abuser things in general. They reconcile upon their release, but members of the cause have become even more suspicious and fearful of Freddy, believing him to be deranged or an undercover agent or simply beyond their help.
Deranged.
Okay, so here's something that's, like, interesting. At one point, Elizabeth, so this is Dodd's daughter, she tries to hit on him.
Yeah, she, like, puts her hand on his thigh near his crotch.
Yeah, and he,
like,
he resists.
Yeah, he's like, puts her hands.
Which is very, like, this is a sign of some progress for this man, because this man is seen masturbating openly at a beach in the beginning of the film. So it's like, this guy is not one to turn down the sexual advance of a woman,
but he
especially
did.
A pretty woman. Yes. And he does, because he basically is like, no, you know, you're married, and like, we can't do this. And also, your Dodd's daughter, very weird. But then at the dinner table, she's like, well, I think he's in love with me.
I think he's in love with me. Like, no.
He's not.
You made a move on him and he resisted.
So it's interesting that she, like, turns against him because of that.
Very interesting.
But really, she has no say in what happens to him. It's mainly Amy Adams' character is the one with, like, the most say of what happens to him.
Yeah, at one point, she, like, there's a weird scene where, like, they're standing in front of a mirror and she, like, jerks Philip Seymour Hoffman off.
While, like, making him promise to, like,
stop boozing and, like,
and
be better.
Yeah, basically.
And then she, like, goes and talks to Freddy and is like, you need to stop drinking. And
he also promises to stop drinking.
Yes.
She's a very influential woman, I suppose.
Yes.
And, yeah, but she keeps saying, like, you know, he's beyond our help. Like, you're trying to help him, but some people are just beyond help. Mm-hmm. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is kind of the opinion that no one is beyond help.
Like, yeah.
And that he can help them, and that if we don't help him, then, like, what is this all for?
Like, he found the most damaged person.
Right, ever, he's basically like, if we can't fix this, then, like, what's our movement even about?
Exactly.
So, it's kind of one of those, like...
He's kind of buying his own shit.
Oh, he definitely buys his own shit. I mean, here's the thing. It's, like, one of those things where it's, like... I don't think you can truly be, like, a cult leader and not buy a little bit of your own shit.
I think that...
Unless your name is Joseph Smith and you wrote the Book of Mormon. In which case, I don't think you buy it at all.
And I think you know.
And you straight up know that you're lying because you're an actual con man for a living. And you didn't think that it would get you shot. But hey.
I mean, also Charles Manson's demands were just like... let's just go out and live in the desert and race dune buggies. And the girls were like, no. And he was like, there's a race war about to happen. So, like, we need to go out to the desert.
We have to go.
And they're like, no, Charlie. And he's like, well, let's go kill some people and blame it on black people. So we'll start the race war. And then let's go to the desert.
And then we can race the dune buggies. And they're like, all right, Charlie. You and the dune buggies. Jesus. It's like, I think that most cult leaders do... Maybe not to the full extent that their believers do.
Yeah,
do believe, like Jim Jones believed the shit he was saying.
Yes.
For the most part. Did Jim Jones
know he was manipulating people?
Yes. Did Jim Jones think that the government was secretly, like, actually coming to tear them apart? No.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he felt the pressure.
I mean, he was on a lot of speed, so we don't really know.
We don't really know what's going on in that
head.
It's like, but he definitely believed in, like, the things that the cult originally stood for. And I don't think that this guy truly thinks, like, Scientology can cure leukemia, but I do think he probably believes in past lives.
Yes.
He probably does Here's the thing, too. This is, like, something that's really interesting. That this is, like, actually very real, but Scientologists are like, well, it's a sign of this thing. And you're like, well, not really. This is more just, like, how the brain works. Which is, like, if you just think something hard enough, you can, like... I mean, all that we're seeing is, like, light bouncing back and our brain interpreting those signals.
Yeah.
So, like, nothing is real. Like, I don't know how to lay this on you gently, but, like, nothing is, like, we have no idea how things really look.
Exactly.
Because all of what we see is just our brain interpreting signals. I mean, people, like, think about this. People that are colorblind... don't see things the way you do. And unless you're colorblind, you have no idea how the world looks to colorblind people. And, like, it's interesting. Like, I don't know how blue looks to you.
Yeah,
I assume it's similar because we can both recognize blue. But it's like...
It could be different.
It could look different. The shades could look different. I mean, what was the green... What was the golden...
The golden white dress all, with the black and blue.
What was it all for? It was just proving that, right? They're like, everybody sees stuff so different and you have no idea how people see stuff. And so you can, like, make your mind... If you work hard enough, you can, like... convince your mind that it sees things that are really not there.
Yeah. You can convince yourself that things are true.
You can convince yourself that you remember stuff that you don't really remember. Yes. This is a really big problem with leading questions in therapy / police interrogations.
Yes.
It's been a problem for a long time.
False confessions happen all the time.
We've known about it. It's go watch the Documentary Now episode where it's the, oh my god, what is it called?
It's the thin, no, the, oh my god.
Oh, but it's hilarious.
It's like the Thin Blue Line one.
Yeah, it is a Thin Blue Line one.
Documentary.
It's literally, there's a line in it where the police officer says, now his license plate, jazz, exclamation point, could have easily been mistaken as
I heart puss.
And it's like. And then the eyewitness is like...
It's called the eye doesn't lie.
The eye doesn't lie. And what's funny, it's funny because the eyes do lie, right? That's the point, is that every the cops are just pushing this narrative, and finally they push witnesses enough that the witnesses are like, yeah, I get it. Mean,
because they hate Fred Armisen so much because he's so annoying.
And he is annoying.
And he's like, you can just look at him, you can see that he belongs in jail.
Well... I mean, who did it? Did I do it? Who knows? Well, I mean, you did do it, right? Well, yeah, but you're not going to put that in the documentary, are you? Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. We're going to make it pretty clear that it was you. Oh. Well, that's not good. Did he do it? But, like, seriously, did he do it? Did he set me up? I don't know. Wait, did he? He did? You could tell me if he did. So
go watch the documentary now. The eye doesn't
lie. It's absolutely hilarious. It's on Netflix. But also, like, if you want a really scary example of this and you're good with freaking yourself out forever, mm-hmm. I suggest you go into your bathroom, you turn off all the lights, and you just look at yourself in the mirror. Just look at yourself in the mirror for, I don't know, 10 minutes. No lights. Just stare at yourself. Don't look at anything else other than your face. And your face will turn into something very scary.
Oh,
it's
my God.
Terrifying. It literally makes me so afraid of mirrors. I hate mirrors, especially in the dark. I just also hate anything that involves horror and mirrors. Hate it. It's the one thing that will always scare me. But the reason, there's a reason. So after you do that, you can pause if you want and come back. I'll wait. So you're back.
Yep.
And you did that, and it was really scary, and you're like, Allison, what was that?
What? Why did you do that to me?
So here's what it was. Here's the thing. Your brain gets bored when it looks at the same object for too long. So your brain will start trying to, like, rearrange objects to be more visually interesting to mm-hmm. your face, and that's why your face gets all scary. Oof. Your brain is not reliable.
No.
And this is what Scientology bases itself on, which is that the brain isn't reliable and is very easily, it's very easy to feel like things happen to you that never happen to you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you just suggest something.
Not that there aren't, like, some crazy cases, like, about reincarnation that I'm like, I don't know how that
couldn't
be real, but, this is certainly not one of those.
No, definitely.
Certainly not one of those cases.
I don't trust Lancaster Dodd.
No. Or L. Ron Hubbard. So, Dodd insists, picking back up, Dodd insists that Freddy behavior can be corrected with more rigorous and repetitive conditioning, which Freddy finds difficult to internalize. Freddy accompanies Dodd to Phoenix, Arizona to celebrate the release of Dodd's latest book.
Dianetics, right?
Yes.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. It's called, like, Book 2 in this...
It's Dianetics.
Yes. When Dodd's publisher criticizes the quality of the book and its teaching, Freddy assaults him.
As he does.
Helen Sullivan, a previously acquiescent acolyte? Yeah, right?
Yeah, acolyte.
Yeah. Causes Dodd to lose his temper after she questions some of the details in the book. Basically, she just mentions, like, I noticed that some of the things you said in the earlier book you're saying now aren't true, mm-hmm. or, like, or are...
pointing out inconsistencies.
Yeah, and he's basically like, well, stuff changes. I learned new things. Mm-hmm. I discovered new things. And she's like, but I'm just confused because... And then he's like, what do you want? And she's like, nothing, I'm sorry. So that's Laura Dern. That's her little cameo. Yes. Dodd takes Freddy to a salt flat with his motorcycle, telling him to pick a point in the distance and drive towards it as fast as he can. Freddy drives off and disappears.
He just takes off.
Never comes back. Freddy returns home to Lynn, Massachusetts to rekindle his relationship with Doris, but learns from Doris's mother that she has married and started a family since he last saw her. So Doris, we say she's 23 now. Mm-hmm. This is what we find out. So he left her when she was 16. So it's been how many years? 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. It's been 7 years since he's been back. She left 3 years ago. So she waited for him for 4 years.
Yeah.
And he doesn't come back. So that's really on him.
Yes.
So he tells her mother that he's glad she's happy. Then while sleeping in a movie theater, Freddy receives a phone call from Dodd, who is now residing in England and begging Freddy to visit. Upon arriving, Freddy finds the cause to have grown ever larger, and Dodd seemingly bent to the will of his wife. Not expecting Freddy to stay with him, Dodd requests that if Freddy can find a way to live without a master, any master, then he is to let the rest of us know, because he will be the first person in history to ever do so. Dodd then recounts that in a past life, they had worked in Paris to send balloons across a blockade created by Prussian forces. Dodd gives him an ultimatum: stay with the cause and devote himself to it for the rest of his life, or leave and never return. As Freddy suggests that they may meet again in the next life, Dodd claims that if they do, it will be as sworn enemies. Ooh. Something that's really interesting is when he comes to England, Dodd is initially like, why are you here? And it's like,
you asked me.
And he's like, nope. He's like, that, I didn't do that. And he's like, yeah, you did. And he's like, that must have been a dream. So it's like, just like the ultimate gaslighting.
Yes.
It's literally like, absolutely.
Just manipulation.
Yeah. And it just makes Freddy, you know, who's already a really unstable person.
Yeah, and we feel bad for him.
Question because, his reality, like, even more.
Yes.
So, Dodd begins singing Slow Boat to China as Freddy begins to cry. I did not know what that was about.
Yeah.
I was like, oop, he's singing a song that we have not heard before. I don't know what connection this has. Freddy leaves and picks up a woman at a local pub and then repeats questions from his first processing session with Dodd as he is having sex with her. On a beach, Freddy curls up next to a crude sand sculpture of a woman he and his Navy comrades had sculpted during the war.
Yeah.
So there you go.
That's it. That's the movie.
Yup.
So, it's very pretty.
Yeah.
And the acting is superb.
Yeah. I mean, it's like some of the best actors.
Yeah. Ever.
Right. Like, they're so good. But here's the thing. It's just kind of boring. Like, overall, it's just very slow.
I would say that if you want, I don't know, I think that you could get more out of, like, a Scientology documentary.
Truly. Here's what I really don't like about this movie. Scientology is fucking insane, okay? It's crazy. It's not only manipulative, which yeah. is all this shit is real, where yeah. they trick you into thinking you've seen all this shit.
Yeah, basically, they do the processing thing.
Basically brainwash you. Not even brainwash you, but they get your mind to think things that haven't happened. Like mm-hmm. exactly how we discussed, where yeah. through a bunch of suggestion, they make you believe all this crazy stuff. It's like literally almost like hypnosis.
That's what the guy says at yeah. the meeting. He's yeah. like, are you hypnotizing them? And he's like, it's a de-hypnosis.
It's basically like lots and lots and lots of hypnosis plus just a lot of like psychological breaking and suggestion. And
that's what happens and all of that stuff. Lots, yeah, you have to like break people psychologically.
Yeah,
and, like,
I mean,
make
it's
them
like,
think as like a whole.
Like, for example, during processing, you can't blink.
Yeah.
Which just automatically makes you want to say the correct thing so you can move on because mm-hmm. your eyes hurt.
Yeah.
So it's like, and here's the thing, like, as humans, even if we know we're lying, if we say something, even if we don't believe it, the more we say it, the more we will believe it.
Yeah.
Which is like, if someone asked you if you had ever stolen a car, you might say no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say then they slap you, and they say, have you ever stolen a car? And you say, no. And then they slap you again, and they say, have you ever stolen a car? And you go, no. And then they slap you again, and then they say, have you ever stolen a car? And you go, yes, you're fine, I stole a car, stop slapping me, yes, I stole a car. And they're going to be like, what car was it? And then
that's
you're going to
why waterboarding doesn't work.
And then you're going to have to say something else, right? Like, you're going to have to now dig the lie deeper. And then before you know it, I mean, this is literally how false confessions exist. Which is like, do you want to eat? Then, like, say what I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just build this lie, and through them giving you positive or negative feedback, you know which direction to go into. And then before long, like, maybe you'll even believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you say it enough and you have to think it to get food,
your brain will start to think it.
Exactly. So it's like, this is exactly how it works. And this is exactly how all brainwashing and false confessions and everything works.
Mm-hmm.
Is people are really easy to manipulate, especially when things like their well-being is on the line.
Yeah, like when they're not well, when they're vulnerable, they're the easiest to manipulate.
Yeah.
And like, arguably, Freddie Quill, is it Quill? No.
I think it is.
Freddie Quill is one of the most vulnerable people.
Yeah, he is not doing well in life before he comes. And this is something that's, I think, interesting about the movie, is he shows up and he's just a wreck. And he does get his life, like, significantly together mm-hmm. because of this cult. Like, he stops drinking so much, mm-hmm. and he does kind of start to have a little bit of structure. And
self-control.
Yeah, and that is good. But then also, it's like, well, he can't leave either. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, how much of this is, like, imposed on him and how much of it is him changing.
Yeah.
But here's what I think is, like, the most annoying thing about this movie to me. It's that Scientology is so much crazier than this. Scientology is, like, we sell our children to work in the middle of the sea.
The Sea Org.
As slaves. And so they can be brainwashed their entire lives. And then when they're adults, they'll be released into the world. And then they'll be allowed to have kids and send them on the slave labor boat. And we'll sell those products that they make. And we'll get celebrities to believe in this. And we'll tell celebrities that they're their own gods.
And we'll make tons of money off of it.
It's like, This is insane.
That's so interesting. You guys should watch Going Clear, which is a great Scientology documentary. It's for free on, well, free with Prime. Very good. It's like from a guy who got out, and it's very excellent. And like, there's some wild stuff. Like the Scientology will like stalk you. Like they'll tail you if you ever talk about Scientology negatively, and you have any pull. It's wild.
It's a good thing we live here.
I know, right?
Because otherwise,
if we lived in like LA,
oh, buddy,
we'd be dead.
We certainly wouldn't have the backing of the Scientologists on our podcast. That's for sure.
Definitely not.
Which right now, you know, we have a strong
Scientology pull.
I would say it's probably 50% of our listener base.
Mm-hmm. I would say so.
We're lying.
We're lying.
I don't
you
know.
You idiots.
I don't know your religion you at all. It. Stupid. Certainly if we have a large Scientology following base, not after this.
Yeah.
But
what's really funny is that like Paul Thomas Anderson like doesn't make Scientology so as insane as it is because of Tom Cruise.
He gets scared and he backs down like a little baby wimp.
Because he's like, my friend with Tom Cruise, and we made like, Magnolia together.
And it's like, Tom Cruise is insane, and when you look into his eyes, it looks like there's a tiny Tom Cruise in there banging on the windows of the soul and being like, please let me out. And I'm sad for him. And watching, I love...
He's a man spiraling.
Oh, been spiraling. Yes. Oh my God. That Oprah interview.
I know.
When he jumps up on the table. Couch and everyone just keeps clapping. And it's like, what are you clapping for?
He's insane.
Fucking insane people. I don't know. You should watch that if you've never seen it. It's like, it's out of context, of course, but there is no context that could justify what's happening.
It's true. You guys should also watch interviews of Tom Cruise with people challenging Scientology.
Oh, my God.
And he gets super pissed.
It's just like, because they have no explanation.
Yeah.
They get mad because they can never actually refute anything, so they just get mad. And you're like, this is the weakest religion ever, maybe. Because most religions kind of just build on another religious text that already exists, so you've got, like, the backing of those people, too.
But he was like, no! No, but I'm going to write a science fiction novel.
But Scientology is just so incredibly weak, and it just has there's, like, psychological things that can explain literally everything that they do and why people think it works. And
they
say no to
they think psychology doesn't work. They're like, they publicly won't allow people to go to therapy and stuff if they're in Scientology.
Probably because a therapist would be like, do you know that this can happen to anyone, anytime?
Mm-hmm.
You know this isn't a unique experience. Like, I mean, it's semi-unique in that most of us never have to go through it, but it's not unique in that it could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely like, I don't know, it's such a weak religion.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he doesn't, there's so much crazier stuff that he could have focused on that would have made this movie so much more interesting and insane. But instead, he was like, let me focus on the most weak-ass, boring part of this religion. And also, the main character is going to come away a better person for having been in it.
Yes.
And you're like, well, what kind of message are you trying to send? Because I walked away going, you know, Scientology doesn't look that bad. If I didn't know anything about Scientology, and all I knew was this movie, I would be like, yeah, it's a little weird, but, like...
Not that bad.
It's kind of good.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's not good. It's not good at all. And the fact that, like, that's what you kind of walk away after this movie, you're like, well, I mean, maybe Dodd isn't the best guy personally, but the religion is fine. And it's like, no, the religion is also insane. It's just... It's so boring. And there was like a few parts I found really interesting. I like at the beginning, but I'm going to say it's probably because it was the beginning and I wasn't bored yet.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning's fine. Then I started to get bored once he was on the boat. When he first gets on the boat, I'm like, this is boring.
Mm-hmm.
Really, as soon as he runs away from the department store, I'm like,
the department store thing is really interesting.
Really interesting. But then it gets kind of boring because he's just farming and he's drinking his beverage. And you're like, okay, move. Processing happens, kind of interesting, but
then
not...
it gets boring.
But then it's boring again, boring, and then the fight at the party, that's interesting, then it gets boring again, then... It's also just because, like, nothing comes out of the fight at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he says all this stuff, but then nobody cares.
Yeah.
And then it gets boring again, and then it jumps forward... And it's boring, and it's more just brainwashing, and it's still boring. And then He tries to go and see Doris, and that's sad because she's not there.
It's interesting and sad.
It's interesting and sad. But then it's boring, and then he sees L. Ron Hubbard again, and he sings Slow Boat to China, and you're kind of like, what? And then it's over.
Yeah.
And that's, like, what I really remember from the movie. And also, Elizabeth tries to touch his dick, and he says no.
Yeah.
And that's all I remember. And it's like, I mean, I remember, obviously, the plot. I just watched it, but... this is all I know I'll walk away with, is the fight in the department store, dick touching, and fights, and that's it.
Yeah.
And Slow Boat to China, being sang. So I don't know. I was like, I just feel like this movie had no stakes.
Yeah, and I think coming from There Will Be Blood, especially.
It's hard, because I'm glad this wasn't my first exposure to him.
Yeah, There Will Be Blood is just, the stakes are so much higher. Because anything could happen at any moment.
And here's what's good about There Will Be Blood. There Will Be Blood is a super talk-heavy movie where also not a lot of major events happen. It's basically just the same shit over and over. But the shit is just a lot more interesting because
there's this savvy businessman, it's like smooth business, talking
oil tycoon back before business, back when businesses were literally just like, who got there first?
Exactly.
Baby?
1910s.
There was no monopolies. Mm-hmm. It was just people fighting, duking it out for oil. And also oil's a really dangerous business. So it's still really dangerous.
Yeah. So like, people could die anytime.
Anytime. People still could die. We have really not fixed the oil industry all that much. Mm-hmm. This was kind of like, we did this and we never did anything else.
Yeah.
And then the kid is a really interesting, all the characters are super interesting. All the stakes feel really high. And then watching like the slow descent into madness of
Daniel Plainview.
Daniel Plainview is so interesting. Mm-hmm. And then the scene where he goes, I've abandoned my boy.
I've abandoned my son.
And then spoiler alert, like major spoiler alert coming up. So if you haven't seen it, like maybe don't listen to this part. Maybe fast forward 30 seconds. Is when he bashes in the brains.
When he brushes Paul Dano's brains in.
It's so interesting.
Yes.
Versus this is like, it ends on what? Slow Boat to China? A song that has had no significance in the movie at all up until this point, and Freddie's crying for some reason. I don't really know why.
That's true.
It's just like, this movie is boring. And it's sad because it doesn't have to be boring because Scientology is
insane. The content that it comes from is very interesting.
It's literally, a Scientology documentary is way more interesting than this, and that's true.
It's not fictionalized. Go watch Going Clear. And so much more.
It's literally not fictionalized at all. Like,
The entire time you'll watch the documentary, you'll be like, what?
It's just like Tom Cruise. Just the story of Tom Cruise's like thing with Scientology alone is more interesting than this entire movie. And this is about like, here's what I also think it is. It's not about the creation of Scientology, and it's also not about this crazy Hollywood radicalization that Scientology later takes, like in the 80s and 90s. It's about Scientology in its very early years, which is when it's the most boring, which is probably why it has survived as long as it did.
Yeah.
Because it has a really boring, like, come up.
Yeah.
L. Ron Hubbard is, while personally a very interesting person.
Yes.
With a crazy life.
Crazy life. He's insane.
His personality, his like ego, his alter ego or whatever, is just like
his cult leader ego.
Just a boring dude.
Yeah.
It's not like Charles Manson manipulation, and it's not like Jim Jones insane, like let's move to a foreign country.
Let's move to Guyana and I'm on speed all the time.
And let's start a utopia. It's not like that either. It's nothing. It's just some white guy in a sweater vest.
And one time, L. Ron Hubbard told someone that the best way to make money is religion. He said that's true. He said that before he wrote Dianetics.
So here's the thing. I feel like this is how you get your cult to be like an established religion. Because like all violent cults or all crazy insane cults, those peter out pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because you either just can't get enough people on board or, you know, you get all your members to commit suicide and then you don't have any members.
Or you get some of them to commit murder.
And then they get arrested and you don't have any members. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you don't have anyone. Mm-hmm. That's the end of the cult right there. But with like L. Ron Hubbard, he gets arrested, but like not for anything. Like for,
not for practicing medicine without a license.
Because he's not even really practicing medicine, right? He's just like, I mean, that's the deal. Is he says, well, it's a religion. And then they're like,
he's a con artist.
And basically they're like, okay, we can't arrest you because you can't arrest you for religion. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you are practicing medicine without a license, if you do it under the guise of it's my religion and everyone else is like, yep, that's our religion, then it's like, well, I can't do anything to you. So this is it, right? Like, he's boring. And, but the things he says are, like, interesting enough that people will believe them. And he's boring enough that you can trust him that when he's, like, brainwashing you, you're like, this is fine.
This is fine. Yeah.
And then, you know, once you're kind of been brainwashed, it's like, well, that's sort of it. So this is, like, and then, you know, later in life, it becomes this very almost, like, mafia-esque. Yeah. Like, not quite mafia-esque in the way of, like, the Catholic Church, but, like... Mafia-esque in the sense that, like, when you leave, you don't really speak out.
Yeah, and, like, people track you.
Because they're
like,
never going to leave you alone.
Yeah, ever.
And they're not going to do anything to you, but they're not going to leave you alone.
You're not going
to
live, like, a peaceful life.
Yeah, and so it's sort of like when you score really well on the ASVAB. And,
oh, my God, yes.
And then the army recruiters will never leave you alone. And you're like, God, why did I just score really poorly on the ASVAB? This had no bearing on my life. And now I can never get a moment's rest because they want me to be in the Air Force. And it's like, oh, please. So it's really similar to that, I think. And it's just one of those things. That it reminds me a lot, honestly, of Mormonism. Mm-hmm. And not, Joseph Smith was insane. He's actually insane. And he was literally, and when I say making things up as he goes, I mean, people were like, hey, what about this? And he was like,
well,
golden plates under a tree. I don't know. And so, but the angel said, no, I can't show them to you. So I hid them. And everyone was like, that makes sense. And, but here's the thing, I truly believe. And no, Mormons, this is the fastest growing religion in America. Mm-hmm. I think in the world, perhaps.
It is. It is. I learned that in my world religion class.
So I don't want to diss on any of it, of the fastest growing religion in the world. But I think that if Joseph Smith had not died prematurely by being shot because he was such a liar, I think he would have... It brought because people were so mad that he was such a liar. I think it probably would have eventually come out that he was a liar.
But then Brigham Young took over.
But then Brigham Young was just a boring guy who really believed in the thing. And nobody could be mad at the boring guy who they could all project themselves onto.
Because he genuinely believed it.
And this is the problem, right? The guy that was lying never got caught in the lie because he died before we could prove it.
For being a liar.
And it's like 1800, so nobody like has the internet. We can't go back and like, well, you know, retcon whatever he did. It's like... there weren't any podcasts back then to poke holes in the inconsistencies. We just have to look at the book that somebody wrote and be like, well, I mean, I can't prove he was lying, but it's like, I mean, maybe you can't prove it, but I certainly could guess.
One could assume.
One could assume he was lying. You know, I was listening to a podcast today. It's called Creepy, which if you guys are fans of like,
Horror fiction.
Yeah, horror fiction and dramatized podcasts and stuff. Or if you're a fan of the No Sleep podcast. It's a podcast where they read creepypastas. Although, again, it's like one of those situations where it's gotten big enough that they can't just read creepypastas anymore. Mm-hmm. But they did one today where this girl or this guy goes to hell and basically meets the devil after like all the trials of hell or whatever. And the devil basically reveals to him that everyone goes to hell. And that no one goes to heaven, that's a myth.
Oh my God.
He basically says, he's like, so, you know, God has ultimate power or whatever. He's like, but I kind of basically do too. So I pretended to be Jesus for 35 years. And the devil basically says, like, I pretended to be Jesus. I convinced everyone that I was magic because I am magic. And I got all these people to believe that, like, I died for your sins. So people just keep sinning because they think it's okay because they'll get forgiven. But there is no Jesus.
My God.
So he basically says, like, I fixed it so that everyone who believes in the New Testament comes to hell.
That sounds more like Satan fan fiction
so
to me.
So it's only, like, Orthodox Jews that go to heaven. Which I was like, that is hilarious. And, like, if I was going to believe any event, that seems pretty plausible. He was like, yes. So the guy, he literally goes, You think the guy who kicked you out of paradise for eating an apple that he put there, then burned down the world because Babylon was basically partying too hard, minus two people on a boat.
Right, what a fucking dark.
You think that guy sent his son to die for you because he felt bad and loved you?
No.
He was like, nope, this is always how it's been.
That does not add up.
Yep, and so he was like, but hey, if everyone thinks they're forgiven and they can just ask for forgiveness, then
they'll
just keep sinning.
And then I get them.
And he was like, and that's the greatest trick I ever played.
Oh my God,
that's hilarious.
That's really good.
It was crazy, crazy story, hilarious. And this is how I feel. This is how I feel about all religions, basically.
Me too!
I can't prove it with some of the older ones because there's literally just nothing. We know nothing.
Yeah.
But it's like...
hearsay.
It's just more like if Mormonism is... and Scientology are any, you know, indicator on how major religions are formed.
Exactly.
Which I believe that they are.
I believe they're good examples of
it. I believe they're good examples of how religions can be formed. It's like... well, here it is. You just kind of need a semi-boring guy that people really look up to and will lie for.
Yeah.
Not even just lie for, but believe in so much that they'll figure out ways...
obsessed with them.
And they'll figure out ways to cover up whatever inconsistencies you have.
It's just a manipulative person, like, taking advantage of others.
It's just like, get the boring guy that's really good at figuring out how to cover up plot holes. Get that guy as your right-hand man. If you're the liar,
mm-hmm.
and like, boom, suddenly you're the fastest growing religion in the world.
True.
Or you're the Hollywood religion.
Mm-hmm.
I also think Scientology is really appealing to people because it is a religion that kind of suggests that you can fix all your own problems
mm-hmm.
because you are basically...
your brain is powerful enough.
You're basically a god. Like,
yeah.
Like, gods... don't exist. We are gods. Like, we are the highest form of being that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, which is like, if you're just famous or like you have a really big ego or you have a lot of problems,
mm-hmm.
this is the kind of thing that like feels so good when you're like, yeah, you know, I have a perfect brain and the world has tainted my brain throughout, you know, trillions of years. with a T. Through trillions of years of, you know, problems in my past lives and not knowing about this,
mm-hmm.
I've, you know, tainted my perfect brain and that's why I have issues. And that if I can just revert back to my perfect brain by exploring all the traumas I had in my past lives,
mm-hmm.
I can, you know, fix my problems. Which sounds a lot like how multiple personality disorder got invented.
Yes. Yes.
Now that I'm saying it out loud.
Yes. You're completely right.
Multiple personality was basically like, oh, you are depressed? Well, have you thought that maybe you were abused? And you're like, I don't think I was abused. And it's like, well, why don't you remember on it?
Yeah.
And, oh, your depression isn't fixed? Well, you must have suffered more abuse than you ever thought. I think you should keep trying to dig deep into that. See, you're still depressed even after thinking your family was a part of a cannibal cult that worshipped Satan? Well, there must have been something even worse. You have... 86 different personalities. And we love that.
We do.
Just like we love this.
We eat it up. I do some trivia.
Trivia, go for it.
So during the jail cell scene, Joaquin Phoenix breaks a real toilet. His actions were entirely improvised. Due to the historical past of the building where the scene took place, the toilet was considered historical, but Joaquin Phoenix had no intentions to break the toilet, nor did he think it was possible.
That's fair.
He just did it, and he was like, oh.
The fucking set guy that got, the fucking PA
yes!
that rented that set that was gonna have to talk to that person afterwards was like, oh my fucking God. No.
After a few days of shooting, Paul Thomas Anderson noticed that Joaquin Phoenix would use the whole space where they were filming, even if it was outside the marks, so which is a classic Freddy move. So he told the Lightning crew to have the whole space ready to follow Phoenix with the camera if necessary.
Wow.
And
they again were like,
yeah. drinking jug juice, the Navy slang for imbibing, I don't know, fuel mixed with cans of fruit, was detailed by the staff of the aircraft carrier, the USS Hornet Museum.
What?
One of the locations utilized for the shoot. The scene in which Freddy gets ethanol out of the torpedo on the ship is also based on a true story told by Jason Roberts to Paul Thomas Anderson.
What?
Mm-hmm.
People did that?
Yeah.
Guys, you can just let grapes ferment. And then you'll have alcohol. You don't have to drink gas. I mean, Jesus Christ, people.
Paul Thomas Anderson has acknowledged that L. Ron Hubbard and the Church of Scientology served as partial basis for the character of Lancaster Dodd and his cult.
When I do say partial, I mean 95%. Yes.
This revelation sparked much discussion in the press, as the Church of Scientology has a long history of litigation against critics of Hubbard.
Hold on. This revelation? What kind of fucking film critic watched this and didn't immediately know?
Though the church released no official comment on the film, Anderson claims that he screened the film for his friend Tom Cruise, an outspoken Scientology advocate. Cruise erupted with anger, specifically objecting to the scenes where Dodd's son Val admits that Dodd made up the tenets of the cause, which parallels real-life admissions by Hubbard's son. Anderson has admitted to a heated exchange with Cruise, though both the actor and director have kept details of their argument and the outcome private.
I wonder if they're still friends.
I don't know. This marked Philip Seymour Hoffman's fourth and final Oscar nomination.
Aww.
Paul Thomas Anderson said that The Master is the film he's most proud of. Joaquin Phoenix's parents escaped the infamous Children of God cult in the 1970s.
Yeah, I was thinking that, you know, when I was watching this, I was like, Joaquin Phoenix grew up in a cult.
He was, like, molested in a cult. Like, it was a molest cult back then.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah.
I was like, so interesting that... Interesting.
Interesting that he did this. And River Phoenix was also, in the cult, and he talked about, like, being abused in the cult.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is sad. Philip Seymour Hoffman had his first drink in 23 years at the wrap party of this film, leading to his relapse of alcohol.
No. Mm-hmm. That's so awful. Oh, no.
I know. The Rorschach inkblot cards in the hospital scene with the psychologist are real ones. However, he skips from card 1 to card 4, which violates the very strict rules of the Rorschach administration.
Oh, geez.
That's interesting.
Something that 4 people noticed when they saw the film.
The very first line in the film where Freddie is talking on the beach was entirely improvised. This is Philip Seymour Hoffman's last film with Paul Thomas Anderson before he died in 2014. He's acted in 5 of Anderson's movies.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's quite a few.
Mm-hmm. In order to achieve the effect of clenching his mouth and talking out of one side. Joaquin Phoenix had his dentist attach metal plates to his teeth with rubber bands to hold them shut. The rubber bands weren't strong enough to hold his mouth shut, so he removed them. But the metal plates, complete with the screws that slightly cut up the inside of his cheek, were enough to have a constant reminder that it allowed him to play the aspect of the character.
I would never do that.
Yeah.
I would just be like, maybe we don't do that part.
Peggy Dodd makes the announcement that they, the cause, will be publishing her husband Mr. Dodd's second book, The Split Saver, in Phoenix, Arizona, because Phoenix symbolizes new beginnings. The same reason Joaquin Phoenix and his family changed their last name from Bottom after leaving the Children of God cult.
Whoa!
Mm-hmm. Paul Thomas Anderson initially wanted to put his own children in the film during the early scenes set at the portrait studio, but he decided against it because his mixed-race children did not have a period-appropriate look.
Sucks.
I know.
His kids were like, what the hell, fuck? Dad? Yeah. What the hell, Dad? I
know. Let's see. Jeremy Renner was originally going to play Freddy. Can you imagine?
Oh my god, it would have been his second Oscar nomination.
I hate it.
Right after, what was it, Waterboy?
No, it was, Waterboy? No, it was Black Hawk Down. No, not Black Hawk Down. The Hurt Locker.
The Hurt Locker. I was just thinking about some sports-related thing.
The Hurt Locker.
Friday Night Lights, was it?
Amanda Seyfried, Emma Stone, and Deborah Ann Woll were considered for the role of Elizabeth. Let's see. I think that's all. James Franco was also attached to the role of Freddie Quill.
Mm.
And then Reese Witherspoon was originally supposed to play Peggy.
Oh.
But then they replaced her with Amy Adams.
That would have been fine.
Lancaster Dodd yelling out pig fuck was improvised.
Jeez, that's why I was so surprised. He was like, what the hell, brother?
That was All right, what would you give this movie?
7, 6, 7.
I give 7 for the acting.
The acting's really good. And it's really pretty. Yeah. But Jesus Christ.
There are some interesting parts, though.
You could up it.
Yeah,
you could
up it.
Okay.
Don't change the cast, though.
No, cast's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a review, a bad one. 90% of these reviews just said that it was really boring.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. 1 out of 10. Anderson, making it up as he goes along. This isn't really even a movie about religion or even Scientology, and in spite of its title, it has relatively little to do with the leader of a cult. It's about a severely ill alcoholic who is brain damaged from drinking gasoline and paint thinner.
Yeah.
He is permanently out of control with a sort of chronic steroid rage expressed in violence and deviant sexual urges. He needs a good physician, recovery from alcoholism, and hormone therapy. This could have been a great movie if we had seen the origins of a cult or followed the ideas or motivations of its leader. From another angle, we may have been able to learn about something about the nature of the sort of person who joins a cult if we had followed an ordinary person into the sect. Instead, we have a cult leader who seems to have sprung up from nowhere, and Freddy is far too frightening and deranged to be typical of anyone. Many people see this as an exposé of religion, but that's like reading bad poetry and calling it an exposé of music. The cause is not a religion, neither is Scientology. Religions seek a higher spiritual plane, and whether it's Allah or the Great White Spirit, they all have a supernatural god. Well, that's not.
That's not true.
That's not the definition of religion.
No.
It is a religion. In the way that it's, like, a belief system that people live their life around, mm-hmm. and it has multiple followers and a leader.
Yes.
Which is, you know, also kind of the definition of a cult, but there's enough people that we call it a religion.
Yes.
So that's the difference.
That is the difference for sure.
This is a story of an ignorant, violent young man and the con artist he falls for. Neither are interesting. I had looked forward to this movie, hoping it would answer the questions about the nature of cults and its members. All it did was raise questions about modern film fans and their slavish devotion to certain directors who have convinced them that for lack of narrative equals artistic freedom, ugliness equals realism, and criminal deviant behavior equals the true nature of man.
Interesting review. Not my least favorite review you've ever read, for sure.
No, I couldn't find very many funny ones because most of them were just like, this was so boring. They make some good points. Very boring. I agree. I like when they say, like, do people just like this because it's Paul Thomas Anderson?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I do see movies and I'm like, people just die for them. And I'm like, why? Is it because it has like a famous director's name attached?
Mm-hmm.
Who's that person? Did Paul Thomas Anderson write Phantom Thread?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We talked about this in the There Will Be Blood episode, which is Paul Thomas Anderson is one of those directors that sometimes hits it and sometimes misses it.
Mm-hmm.
And people will always say he hits it, even when he did not hit it.
He hit it with There Will Be Blood.
He hit it with There Will Be Blood. Did he hit it with Phantom Thread? I've never seen a more boring movie. And this is Paul Thomas Anderson's number one fault is he can get the greatest actors, he can make the most beautiful scores, the most beautiful pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, he needs to pick better writers.
Yeah, because he writes most of his own stuff.
He thinks boring stuff is interesting.
Let's see, I want to make sure that he wrote this. I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah.
But it's like he had a few good ones.
He also wrote There Will Be Blood loosely based on a book.
Right.
But he did write that. It's interesting.
I'm going to find, here he is. Oh, Punch Drunk Love, that was really hit or miss. Okay, There Will Be Blood, everyone loves it. Boogie Nights, wow, he's done a lot. Inherent Vice, Anima, haven't seen that. I don't even know what that is. He's done so much stuff, oh my god.
Yeah.
A lot of these I've never even heard of. But it's Punch Drunk Love, that was really hit or miss. I thought the writing of Punch Drunk Love was pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if he wrote that. No, he did.
Interesting.
It's just like sometimes he gets it if he gets an interesting enough thing to base it on.
Mm-hmm.
But if the thing he's basing it on is inherently very interesting, he kind of does okay.
Yeah.
But it's like whatever it is, he'll choose to focus on the most boring aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's something that is just absolutely insane, like the oil industry,
yeah.
has always been insane through all history,
mm-hmm.
even the most boring aspect of an oil industry will still be interesting.
Yeah.
But something like Scientology, something that should be crazy interesting, he found a way to make it boring.
Yes.
And Phantom Thread is like the same way, like, not to spoil Phantom Thread or anything, but
they make Munchausen by proxy boring.
Yeah, and that's always so interesting. How could you make that boring? It's the most interesting, like, one of the most interesting, thrill, like, easily turned into a thriller mm-hmm. kind of, like, mental disorders that there literally is.
Mm-hmm.
So many people have done it so well.
Yeah.
And somehow you turned a story.
Objects. That's great.
Oh, so good. Somehow you turned a story about Munchausen by proxy, which it should be, by the way, what the movie's about, into some sort of, like, this guy's a tailor, and he's not very nice. But he's not really that mean either. He's just kind of...
blah.
He's just kind of ambiguous as a character. It's sort of like, you know, in real life, things are often a lot more boring than I think we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. Like, people are often a lot more complex. Stories are a lot less intriguing than we mm-hmm. usually think they are. And that's why whenever there's, like, a really cool story in history, we all, like, really attach ourselves to it. Yeah. Or we, you know, kind of dramatize, like, history in order to make it more interesting. Because it's not that interesting, mm-hmm. usually. It's usually really complex and hard to understand. And this is why movies do things based on history. And they don't try and accurately cover all aspects of a historical event.
And when that happens, you get Lincoln, which is so boring.
Oh my god, Lincoln. It's like, look, we...
I watched, like, 40 minutes of it. I was like, I get it.
You were like, yeah.
I was like, I've seen enough.
It's like, I don't. I'm fine. Thank you. Like, and look, Lincoln is such an interesting story. It should be so interesting. Mm-hmm. But it's like, learn what to cut. Learn what to exaggerate. That's what makes it interesting, right? Is like, there are some things where it's like, wow, that was insane. And mm-hmm. I don't know, like, that's an insane story. And
there are some great scenes in that, but I'm just like, it's so boring.
Right. And this is the problem, right? Is like, when you try and capture all the complexities of, like, a real human or real human events into a movie, it's, like, probably not going to come out as interesting as you want unless you have a crazy event, mm-hmm. which there are not very many of. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those already have excellent movies about them.
Yeah.
So, interesting idea. Once again, Paul Thomas Anderson. I don't know why people live and die by Paul Thomas Anderson. I do not live and die by him. He is one of those directors that I'm like, I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
But
it could be good.
It could be good, but I'm not, you know, banking on it being good like I would with, like, Quentin Tarantino.
Exactly.
So, Quentin Tarantino is another great example of directors people live and die for, even though it's like, listen, not everything he's ever made has been
amazing,
top-notch, beautiful.
Everything that I've seen him do has been good.
Right.
But, like, nothing...
Is it all life-changing?
Is it all Inglorious Bastards? Is it all Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
It's just, like, people are like, wow, every movie he's ever made is life-changing. And you're like, you think that really... Or I think the best example of this, in my opinion, is Wes Anderson.
Yes.
I like Wes Anderson films.
Very pretty.
They're gorgeous. They're fine. But at the end of the day, I'm like, how much of this is just symmetry, guys? It's just a symmetrical shot.
Except for Fantastic Mr. Fox. That movie is phenomenal.
That movie's amazing.
That movie is phenomenal.
That is the movie everyone should watch. That, yes. And here's like, I have no problem with any of his other movies. They're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, I don't think they're that interesting usually, the plots. I just think they're really pretty to watch. They're kind of quirky, so it's easy, like, it's fun. It doesn't weigh on your mind too much.
Fantastic Mr. Fox is interesting because it's made for kids, so it has to be, like, capturing your attention all the time when they're going to get
bored. Yeah, and you know why? Because it's also because it's a deviation away from Wes Anderson's usual style, which just makes it so much more mm-hmm. engaging because he had to figure out a way to make his... like, artistic eye come through mm-hmm. in a way that just making a shot symmetrical and putting yellow in the scene can't do.
Yeah, you have to, like, do that stop motion thing and make the, like, the puppets are so integral to the movie.
This is my number one problem with Wes Anderson. I'm like, look, it's pretty, but, like, sometimes we have to just admit that it's a pretty quirky film. I think Taika Waititi is a better Wes Anderson. I agree.
I think he nails the quirky,
Taika Waititi has quirky, beautiful movies with slightly less symmetrical shots, but also much, much better scripts.
And also, like, way more emotional.
Yeah. Oh, and the characters are way more likable.
Yeah.
Way more relatable, always. Mm-hmm. And it's like...
He puts so much depth into all his characters.
You're gonna have to sacrifice, like, some yellow symmetry, but I think it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
For, like, to enjoy the ride. And it be a memorable ride. I've seen so many Wes Anderson films, and I don't really know where some plots start and some end.
That's fair.
Like, some of them I'm kind of like, these are very similar characters. And the fact that they're often played by the same people does not help.
I would say my favorites would be, first, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Agreed.
Then I really like The Royal Tenenbaums. And then I like Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah. See, Moonrise Kingdom, I like it because it's, like, gorgeous. But I don't really... I remember the plot, sort of.
Yeah.
But the plot is, like, not something I remember it's, like, the girl and the boy, and they sort of run off.
Yeah.
But it's, like, That's really all I remember. And then mm-hmm. I remember the outfits that they wore and yeah, some of the shots. And definitely. It's like, I don't think like my number one memory of your movie should be like what the costumes
definitely.
Were.
Yeah, everyone should watch Fantastic Mr. Fox, though.
Fantastic Mr. Fox is great.
It's amazing. It's on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
But he's my greatest example of people that just love him for no other reason than his name.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or, like, you know what, the couple of good things he did. Not that, like, he's fine. He does fine things. It's just, how hard is it to get, like, a film grain and then line up the shot? It's like, I gotta give Wes Anderson credit for having basically created that, but now it's like so many people do, not even creating, but popularizing it.
Yeah.
But now so many people do it that it just kind of feels like Wes Anderson's, also, I have such strong associations with Tumblr and Wes Anderson that I don't know if I'll ever be able to separate myself from, and I just, it's like, I can't even watch Moonrise Kingdom because all I think about is like 2014.
So true. I understand that.
It's like, I don't know what to do with this. I'm sorry that this is what's become associated in my mind with you, and that's not your fault, but I will never be able to get over that. All right, guys.
All right, guys. Watch Clueless and subscribe to our Patreon.
Yep. All right, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.